Yeah, it's really it's a great kind of inside baseball question that everyone else is getting to see as they interact with us and with our offices and staff. I wouldn't say that we have tremendous foot traffic, but that has certainly come to nearly a halt. Legislators, lawmakers, myself, we spend a lot of time in our day interacting with people. Historically, those interactions are at a, you know, a personal level in person, and by and large, those have cut down significantly. I used to spend a lot of time on the phone. I spend much more time on the phone, which probably my wife said was never possible. It actually just, you know, you look for the positives, and the positives are, I think of the district that I represent, you know, it stretches some two and a half hours east to west. And so, you know, historically people would want to have meetings with me. I might be traveling across the state to meet with folks, or they may, you know, be traveling themselves to meet. Today, I think people are just more accustomed to picking up the phone, scheduling some time, and, you know, talking through some issues.
Has it affected the volume of people that you serve, or the quality of the service in time to resolution of a particular request to bird dog something through an agency or something like that?
The impact that I have seen is that a number of the state agencies have not been fully operational. And, you know, there have been lots of news reports about the struggles of people dealing with unemployment. That agency has tasked its employees, I don't know if all of them, but, you know, significant numbers of its employees were working remotely, working from home or what have you. And it just made communicating with the state agencies that much more difficult. I think, again, from the public's perspective, there's a historical kind of mindset that is one where you walk into state agencies. You know, think of your DMVs and places like that. Those things just did not become as possible. And especially for some of our more mature listeners, there is that expectation that you can walk in and that's just not, you know, it's not the same anymore. And so people are adjusting.
Is it going to permanently change that culture?
I think there will be some permanent changes, and some of that can be good, right? I mean, the opportunity to operate, I think the whole world who's navigating COVID is finding ways to operate, and hopefully they're finding ways to operate more efficiently. Government has long been criticized for being slow to evolve, adapt, you know, known for bureaucracy and inefficiencies. So you could argue that this gives us an opportunity to improve that. I wouldn't overpromise that you're going to see immediate results from that. I think you're going to have more people frustrated at first than not. But it creates some pressure on all of us who serve in some public capacity to ask, how can we deliver the services that we're asked to deliver in a more effective and efficient manner given the new norm that we live in?
There's a growing body of research that's concluded that the steep drop in economic activity last spring was primarily a result of individual decisions by consumers and businesses rather than legal mandates. People stopped going to restaurants before governors ordered them shut down, airports emptied out, even though there was never really significant restriction on domestic air travel. How should we view that set of facts in relation to this third wave that Illinois is seeing and the prospect of mitigation efforts in the region that we are in?
I haven't seen those reports, but I suspect they're true. I think, in different contexts, I've talked previously about the fact that I think it's very hard for governments to mandate behavior. Governments, you know, try to influence behavior. That's, you know, you think of some of the incentives that exist in government to get, its people to move in one direction or another. Home ownership is often talked about, something that's incentivized. to encourage certain behaviors, right? I think governmental mandates about how we conduct our lives, where we eat, how we interact in the public are very difficult. I think the governor has, you know, continuously made these mandates. The public receives them in very different ways. Some people, you know, adhere to them strictly. Others resist them. I think that is something far beyond COVID. It's just the natural difficulty that exists in regulating behaviors. I think the opportunity for the government is to educate, provide transparency, facts, and data, and encourage behaviors, incentivize behaviors, rather than coming at societal issues with a kind of the big stick approach, which is either you do this or we're going to penalize you. We're seeing that. We're seeing significant numbers of people who are resisting these orders and almost taunting the government back to say, you know, prove it, prove that you're going to shut me down. All of that is, you know, again, you think of where we're at in society and the notion that there's two sides to every argument, every issue. I certainly encourage us to move in a different way where we find common ground, and whether it's COVID or other things, we try to advocate for things that are backed by data, rational decision making, and recognize that no big stick is going to force people to modify their behavior in every instance.
So certainly the Pritzker administration has engaged in multiple strategies in education, in encouragement, and in some big stick stuff. How would you assess the balance that the administration is striking on that?
Well, I think, you know, early on, I think the governor's orders became very aggressive. And again, you saw the significant resistance. You saw the public outcry in some, you know, primarily geographic areas of the state where they pointed to, you know, they started to pick apart the governor and called him a hypocrite because they saw where either one order conflicted with another or where certain actions of the governor weren't consistent with his own orders. That's, to me, that is the result of kind of the big stick. I think with the internet, I think with the public's accessibility to data and news and reports, people are forming their own opinions on this. And we've asked the governor since day one to try to be more transparent about what data, you know, he would often proclaim again earlier that he surrounded himself with scientists and doctors and he was using their recommendations to guide his actions. But we really never knew what the source of that was. I can't tell you what it was today. And that again, I think, is important to the public. If you're going to say you're relying on data and scientists, you know, what data, what scientists, you know, it becomes important. I'll also say, Charlie, this is why, and I've been very consistent in my belief here, I think it is a failure of the process that the legislature is not more engaged in this. We have a process for making governmental decisions. It relies upon two co-equal branches of government, the executive branch led by the governor, the legislature led by the General Assembly. We're charged to work together and collaborate on the solutions that we need to put forward to our state. The governor's approach on COVID is contrary to that long-standing process. He's operating almost entirely from a unilateral basis. He tells us he's making decisions based on what his advisors and others are telling, but we really don't have any oversight or scrutiny of that. Imagine the difference if the political parties and the legislature were different than that in the governor's office. You know what that would look like. We would be having regular hearings where the governor's experts would be forced to come and testify before a public body, answer questions that the public has, answer questions that the media has been asking that go unanswered. But we don't have any of that. And I call that a failure of the system. I call it a product of the one-party rule that exists in our state. But the bottom line is that I don't think it creates a healthier, more persuasive message from the government, because it seems like it's all coming out of one person rather than a more representative body.
As the campaign season closes, what is your assessment of the picture for your party in Illinois?
Well, look, I think that Illinois is, you know, the country is wrapped up in the national elections and in the presidential race. I think for Illinois Republicans, we're going to see some difficult days ahead in the suburbs. We're going to see likely some victories more downstate. Of course, from a strategic position, if Republicans want to see their agenda advance in state government, we know that we're going to have to do better in the suburbs. And so I think, you know, as we wrap up this election cycle, one of the things that I'll be, advocating within my own party is that we analyze what happened and we look to learn some lessons from it so that we can move forward to the next election cycle more prepared to put forward an agenda that appeals on a wide basis to the state, and especially in the suburbs where we need to see some success.
What do you think President Trump's performance in last night's debate did for the Republican Party in Illinois in those contested suburban areas?
You know, Charlie, I didn't watch the debate. I did watch the first debate, which was widely panned as, frustrating to all public audiences. I didn't watch last night's debate. I think that Illinois Republicans in the suburbs have to, long before last night's debate, they had to do as good of a job as they could do to localize their election and make themselves known to their local voters as someone who can represent them well, notwithstanding whatever the winds may be blowing at the national level in their party, that they can represent them well on the issues that they care about in the suburbs. Suburban voters, they want their streets safe, they want their schools to be high quality, they'd like to see their property taxes come down, and they'd like to have the opportunity for meaningful employment. I think those are issues that Republicans can always stand strong on, and they need to advocate to their voters that they're going to be a strong messenger for that.